So can I tell you, like, my biggest summer regret?
What?
I was so embarrassed when I, like, permed my lashes.
Why? They looked great.
They looked so fake.
Oh, I don't think so.
In the beginning, they were so fake looking. They looked like I put on, like, a strip. I dyed them, and then I curled them, like, permed them.
Yeah, they looked awesome.
Well,
Everywhere
I went, people were like, I love your lashes. Because they were that fucking noticeable.
It's so true. We were sitting at lunch the other day and the waitress came over and she was like, both of you have fabulous lashes, which, and I had just had mine done.
Mm-hmm. And I'm 3 weeks out from my perm, or 3 months out from my perm.
But, so do you think that it was just that they were noticeable? Because I have to say, I feel like my lash woman, I was going to a very reputable place in the city, mm-hmm. And sort of, you know, the New York lash institution here. And the woman who was doing my lashes actually left to start her own company. And one of the things that she told me was that she switched from the silk lashes and the mink lashes to the flat lash.
Because it's lighter?
It's 33% lighter, and they look way more fluttery. I can feel it. I don't know if you can see it right now.
I can see it. I totally saw the difference the second you walked in.
They feel much more natural. I love it.
I see these girls today. They look like they have bat wings.
Oh, my gosh.
On their eyelids.
For you if that's the look, but it's like with makeup. You don't ever want anybody to say, your makeup looks great. You want them to really say, you look great.
Shout out to my friend and client, Amy Holman. She wears a really heavy lash, but it works for her,
mm-hmm.
and it's done right,
mm-hmm.
and she doesn't push it too far, and she doesn't let it, like, she doesn't need a fill ever. She's just ahead of that fill, and it works.
Yeah.
But it does not work on everyone, no. And I think what it does is it actually does the reverse. It makes your, like, you have a heavy eyelid, or it changes the shape of your eye.
It does, and you really want to... A good lash job, because when I have them done, I feel like it opens up the eye.
Right.
And before we get into today's topic, which is all about how to deal with the droopy eyelids, I also want to give a shout out to my lash girl, because she just is opening her new place. So if you're in New York City, her name is Ari, and her company is called Berta Lash. That's BURTELASH.com. She's in the financial area.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that, because I asked her, I was like, what does Bert Lash mean? And she's like, Berta, here's a little culture, was, I always thought it was Genghis Khan, but I think it's I'm going to butcher this, but essentially what I always knew to be Genghis Khan, but it was the only wife that he picked for himself.
Ooh.
Who was a strong, powerful, she was really influential in a lot of his political decisions. And I was like, that's so cool. She was like, I really wanted my company to exude this strong, power, beautiful woman. So Berta Lash.
Love it.
.com. And Ari, thank you, because I'm loving these new flat lashes.
They look the best.
Yeah, and they don't feel heavy, like you were saying. So talking about the droopy eyelids, I love that we got to sit down with Dr. Naz, who is, I mean, like all over DC, she's known as the eye doctor. She's the one that you go to.
She's in the DMV, which is, well, I mean, I should know, I live there, right?
No.
DC, Maryland, Virginia. She's like the eye queen of all those states.
When you told me that the first time, I'm like, she works in the DMV.
Number 47.
I was like, Ryan, you don't want to go. That's not who should be doing your Botox. But yes, got it. She works in the DMV.
She's the queen of eyes in the DMV.
Mm-hmm. And boy, did she have some interesting things to say about how we can handle droopy lids. Eyelid lifts are a very popular procedure. And I only know this because my own father had one. I grew up, he would always read like this. Holding his eyelids up.
Stop it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He did, because he had my grandmother genetically droopy eyelids.
Yeah.
And then found out that if you wait a certain, till they droop a certain amount, it's an insured.
Correct.
But FYI, he had it done and they didn't do enough. And the doctor was like, we'll just come back and we'll touch it up. And he's like, hell no, I'm not going back under your hand. So anyhow. It's too bad he doesn't live here. Funny enough, though, we were here to talk about eyelids. I'm looking right here in your office across at the Faces of Washington article about, that you are the face of eyelid lifts.
I am the face of Island.
So we have come to the right place because it said there you've done over 5,000.
Yes.
Here in the office.
As oculofacial plastic surgeons, our training was in ophthalmology, right? So I did, you know, everyone does a preliminary intern year and then you do 3 years of ophthalmology training. And then in that ophthalmology training, you're kind of, you know, you get all the cataracts and retina stuff. And then quickly, if you're oculoplastics, you realize you don't really want to be in the eye. You want to be on the outside. And so there's actually 7 subspecialties that come out of ophthalmology, which wow. is crazy. And so oculoplastics after, there's only 20 fellowships in the nation per year for ASOPRs, which is the American Society of Ophthalmic Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery. And so they train 20 fellows a year, and it's a 2-year fellowship. And it's very, very hard to get into. And then once you're in, it's actually like super, super, you know, rigorous training because you actually learn full face cosmetic surgery. And in certain fellowships, they even, you know, teach you rhinoplasties. I think there's like everyone has their limitations and you have to like start to understand like, okay, if you want to commit yourself to something, commit yourself to one thing and be really good at it. So that's what I've done. Outside of injectables, I've kind of committed myself to plastic surgery of the eyes and brows. Sure. And obviously lower lids are included. So that's my bread and butter for cosmetic surgery is eyelid lifts. And so going back to your question about medical versus cosmetic, yes, you can do it medically, but you have to kind of pass a certain number of tests. So the first thing insurance companies want are pictures. And so we take pictures with the brows really relaxed because what happens is when the eyes start to get really droopy, everyone starts to recruit with their brows and you see yeah. these people walking with their brows lifted all the time. And that actually is fatiguing after a while, like right. over the course of the day, how long can you do that? And so the insurance company wants to see that with the brows relaxed or the eyelids droopy enough. And then you have to do what's called a visual field to show your insurance company that you cannot see a certain percentage of your peripheral vision. And if you miss that 20 degree, a superior peripheral vision or superior peripheral vision, I can't talk, then you basically get insurance to say, yes, this is affecting the quality of your life. It takes a lot to get there, though.
It takes all – I'm telling you, since I was a little girl, my dad would hold one hand
yes.
up and hold his eyelids up. But finally, he got there anyway. Yeah. So if we are – but this is something that not just, you know, my father in his 70s – needs.
Yes.
This is something that's becoming really popular, especially worldwide with a lot of young people who want to right. have a certain
lid look. Yeah. So in my mind,
yeah.
approaching the 4.0 and the 4.5, I always said the slow and steady tweaks.
Yeah.
So that you don't all of a sudden look brand new.
Yes.
So in my mind, I'm like, that's next for me mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. slightly do the lid.
Yeah.
And I started with under eye, but that would be my next investment.
Because you have more of a hooded lid.
I have a hooded yes. lid. And I did a lash perm to like lift my lashes.
I know.
And I did that truly to cover the hood
yeah.
to create like almost like a diffused richness.
Yeah.
So it didn't look so droopy and to open up my eye.
Yeah.
And I forgot my eyelashes were long because sometimes guys' lashes are longer than now I look like I have like bat wings.
No, they're kind of amazing. They're amazing.
Thank you. Yes. But I really did it to hide the droopiness yeah. of my lid.
Yeah.
So who, other than Rhyme, because like, you know, crazy. We have our own brand of cray, who are the people who are coming in and coming to you about eyelid lifts?
Yeah. So people always will say, well, I'll just wait until insurance covers it. And I always remind that's going to take a very long time for your eyelids to get bad enough for insurance to cover it because it basically has to push down. The skin has to be so significant that it has to push down the eyelid.
Think of a Sharpay.
Yes.
It really is.
No, right.
Right. Like, exactly. Let me just tell you, it's something yeah. that if you think you want it done.
Yeah.
Start saving.
So most of the time, you know, the complex of the actual eyelid, the skin over the eyelid, and the brow, right? You really have to break those three apart. So the patients that come in to see me they have one or all three. So either they have a ptosis, which means that the actual eyelid is droopy, right? And they can also have what's called a mechanical ptosis because the skin is so significant that it's pushing down on the eyelid and it's weighing down. But if you were to lift or remove the skin, the actual eyelid isn't droopy. And that is called the skin itself being droopy and heavy is called dermatocalasis. And I know I'm giving you these fancy words, but it's for a reason. And then there's something called eyebrow ptosis, which means that the brow is droopy. So you have to look at all three of those things. So my patients either have a droopy eyelid and or excess skin and or a droopy brow. And so you don't have to get it. So it's you don't have to do surgery when it's bad enough. You can basically do it. And I recommend doing it before it gets bad enough because you don't want it to be medically necessary. This is a cosmetic procedure that really changes the entire face. So the studies that have been done when they do cosmetic procedures on one part of the face show time and time again that the most powerful procedure is rejuvenation of the eye.
Right.
Right. And so if you're able to open up the eyes, eyebrow, eyelid, your face changes. And then the reverse of that is if you botch the eyelid, it's the one thing that makes people look different.
Right.
So Kenny Rogers, Renee Zellweger are very good examples of people who've had eyelid surgery and they've changed. And what happens is that the eyelid crease, which is the natural fold of the eyelid, is in a natural spot. In Caucasians and, you know, non-Asians, I should say, everyone has a really predominant pretty eyelid crease. Asians also have a very predominant pretty eyelid crease, but it's usually lower.
Right.
And so you have to recognize the natural eyelid crease. If you change it, people will lose their mind.
Right. They're going to look
different. Because they look completely different.
And one thing to consider, you know, we've always spoken to people about making sure you're going to a trained professional. Because there can be complications. I know that if they take too much, you can actually not be able to shut your eyes.
Correct.
That sounds like horrific.
Horrific.
I took a flight to LA and had to sit near a woman where that happened to. And she fell. You know when people fall asleep on your shoulder?
Yeah.
I thought she wasn't asleep.
Oh no.
But she couldn't shut her eye. And it creeped me out beyond belief.
Like, yes.
If she didn't snore, I wouldn't have known.
So she's basically
her eyes were
just...
I could see her eyes. But then I could see the scar. Oh. And I was like, ooh.
That's very observant of you.
She was on my shoulder.
You guys kind of got close on the flight. The biggest, you know, every surgery, I say the surgeon who does your surgery should be able to manage the complications.
Right.
The injector who does your injections should be able to manage the complications, right? So if you can't manage it, don't do it, right? So we have, part of my practice is revision surgery, right? Just like I love doing virgin eyelids. I think it's super fun, great. But revision surgery is extremely challenging. I love doing revision surgeries because I really feel like it's such a challenge and it tests really your surgical skill. And so when patients have too much skin removed from their eyelids, they can't close their eyes. And what happens is that the cornea starts to break down.
Because they get dry, right?
They get dry. Oh. I actually had a case of a woman that I saw in fellowship who saw us and we recommended doing a graft. So we take a graft either from behind the ear or the upper eyelid or the other, you know, lower eyelid if it wasn't touched. And she decided she didn't want to do it. And so we didn't see her. And then she came in and her cornea had completely perforated.
What does that mean?
That means her cornea was so dry that it thinned and it collapsed.
Oh God.
And then she had to get her eye removed.
No.
I mean, how rare is that? That's so rare.
But it happens.
But meaning it's devastating, right? Like this is a very delicate part of your face.
Yeah.
And it seems very easy. If a surgery seems easy, you're a novice surgeon. Every surgery is difficult,
right?
Period. Every surgery should be humbling, right? And so if you go in and you kind of – I always have to check myself. If I feel really confident, if I start to feel like, oh, I have to always check myself because it's when someone feels like they can do anything, they become cowboyish or cowgirlish, that's when – excuse my language – shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So – you really have to understand the delicacy and just the subtleties of the surgery and know that things can go right 99% of the time, but it's that 1% of the time. So that's how we fix a botched eyelid, is with a graft.
So the good news is that there are things, God forbid this ever happens to you, there are things that can be done.
Correct.
All is not lost.
Correct.
So when we are prepping for this, mm-hmm. right, we come in for a consult, we decide that we're going to go under the knife. What is that procedure? What do we need to be aware of? What is the recovery? How mm-hmm. long does it take?
So the upper eyelids, if I'm just going to do what's called a blepharoplasty, I'm just removing skin and maybe some fat from the upper eyelids. I can do that awake. A patient comes in. I've had patients drive themselves home. I usually don't recommend that because you're doing an eyelid procedure and you're going to have ointment in the eye and your eye's going to be blurry. But you kind of can drive yourself home because you haven't had any sedation. So legally you're allowed to, and you're fine. So,
and there's no like blurriness in the eye. Oh, Jesus.
So it's about a 30-minute procedure. Okay. Now,
How long?
30 minutes.
Oh, I thought you said three. I was like, wow.
No, 30-minute procedure. And it's very quick and easy. You come in. If you decide that you do want to get Valium, you just take it about 20 minutes before. And then obviously someone needs to drive you home. And some patients, very rarely do I have to do it under sedation. It's not when you have a breathing tube down your throat. We just do a light sedation, like a colonoscopy, where you're awake, you're breathing, but you're sleepy. And at that point, you know, afterwards, I do close the eyelid with sutures that I remove a week later. You will be bruised. You will be swollen. That usually lasts a week.
What is the pain factor like on that?
There's really no pain.
Really?
There's really no pain. Honestly, I would say most of my patients, I always give a little bit of pain medication because I don't know people's pain threshold. Right. And so I usually tell patients, you know, your pain will usually be less than a 5 and Tylenol is sufficient.
Right.
And if it's more than a 5, which rarely happens, then you can take the Percocet or the Vicodin.
Sure.
But on average, patients require no pain medication after a blepharoplasty.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And then what is the healing with that? Like, can we not wash our face?
Yeah,
can we not?
So you can't get the incision wet for 48 hours. I say no makeup, no contacts, no swimming, no heavy lifting, no heavy bending for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then you kind of can do light activity, your regular stuff. You can read, you can do your usual stuff. If you don't care that, you know, something was done, you can go back to work right away if you're not taking pain medication.
Wow.
But something was done, right? So you're going to get questions. If you're okay with that, great. But usually I tell patients, give it a week, and then at 2 weeks, you can wear makeup. So definitely at 2 weeks, you can go on as if nothing happened.
Wow. And in 2 weeks, is that kind of like if you had, I don't know, let's say there's Mothers of the Bride out, but you know, if you had a big event.
Yeah.
I guess you wouldn't really want to do something 2 weeks before the
event.
I'd
do a month.
But like a month out, you're
1 month.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's not a terrible recovery. Mm-hmm. What is the cost on something like that?
So usually it starts about $3,000 to $4,000.
Oh.
And then it goes up depending on if we're taking fat as well as skin, if we're doing brows, if we're doing, you know, lower eyelids as well. So the cost, just basic cost of just the upper eyelids is about $3,000 to $4,000.
That's not bad.
No.
I was thinking that that's something that would be much more. Now, with the droopy brows,
mm-hmm.
how much of that can we do with like Botox?
Yes. So a chemical lift versus a surgical lift. Botox can give you a lift, but it's never the same as a surgical lift. We're talking millimeters versus like an inch, right? So yes, I can lift the brow with Botox, but if someone has a very, very heavy, thick, droopy brow, it's not going to be significant enough. But you can always test the waters, right? Try it out first, see if you like that amount. But usually if it's a thick, or even if it's not a thick, but you know, you don't want something minimal, then you want to go the surgical route.
And then, you know, I stalk your gram. I'm such
and I stalk yours.
Uh-huh. Stalker all the time. Recently you posted about something non-surgical
mm-hmm.
to change the and to lift the lid.
Yes.
Can we touch on that?
Yeah, yes. And the before and afters were incredible
yes.
on that.
Yes.
What is that called?
So it's called the plasma pen. And, you know, everything that's fun and new always starts in Europe and then kind of trickles down to the US. And so this was available in Europe and Europeans have been raving about this. And then once we got in the US, like we were all about it because we had been following it in Europe for a while. The good news is, you know, sometimes it doesn't make it here because it's not safe.
Right.
So if it does make it here and, you know, it's been around. So it's been around. It's just the US because of the regulations and all that stuff. It always takes a little bit longer. So the plasma pen basically is non-invasive. It uses energy to contract the skin. And I can tell you that the results are pretty powerful. It's, again, not surgery. It's not meant to replace surgery. It's for someone who either isn't ready for surgery because their eyelid skin isn't droopy enough, or they're not a surgical candidate. So, you know, they can't come off their blood thinners, or just in general, if they need sedation, they can't get sedation. So that's rare. But the procedure itself is very easy. I will tell you, they offer it at a lot of med spas now. The biggest complaint with the procedure, I block the entire eyelid with literally 2 injections and the entire eyelid is numb. People who are in med spas, who are estheticians, can't obviously do that. It's very painful without the block, even with topical. If you're going to do it, just know that you really need to have some type of anesthetic that's more than just topical.
How long does that last?
Forever. Forever.
Wait, hang on. I'm going to take one step back before we're talking about the – when you said plasma pen, I'm thinking like microneedling type of – no, that's not what this is. So this has nothing to do with your blood
plasma.
Taking it out, plasma, and microneedling it into the eyelid. So the what skin is tightening. It?
So it's basically energy. So think of it as energy. That's nitrogen, oxygen, and basically the laser will cause thermal injury over the skin, and that causes the skin to contract.
So like an Ulthera for the eye?
Correct. Okay. Kind of. But, you know, the Ulthera kind of goes a little bit deeper even. This is a little bit more superficial because you want it to be superficial. Right. And so that skin contraction basically is happening at a local level, and it happens with every kind of plasma pen application. So you kind of see those dots. Each one of those are delivery of thermal injury to allow the skin to contract. However, there are certain skin types we don't do it in because you can't apply thermal injury to skin colors that are darker.
Right.
I can tell you the only skin color that I don't treat with the plasma pen are African Americans, but anyone else, even Mediterraneans, I do on the eyelids, but not on the face. The eyelid skin is very different than the face skin.
So who's a good candidate for this?
Typically, anyone who is, we grade the skin based on Fitzpatrick types, but I'll tell you, someone who tans easily, right, is a good candidate, and lighter. So if you burn, excellent candidate, right?
So this is something that you don't want to do also then, I guess, in the summer. You want to, right, when you're tan?
You can do it in the summer. The only thing is because it's not one of those, it's not a laser that picks up melanin. It delivers it regardless of your melanin, right?
Oh, okay.
But you want to avoid the sun after, so for about a week or two, because you don't want to pigment.
Got it.
From the sun. Scar.
Are the results instant?
Very good question. Because it's a collagen stimulator, the results take up to 3 months to see, and some patients require more than one procedure.
And then, but we were getting not just skin color, but who is the candidate for this? Like, what kind of changes do we want to the eye? Is it good for somebody with hooded eyelids? Is it good for somebody?
So it's anyone with hooding can do it.
Okay.
The milder the hooding, the better.
Okay.
Because it'll be more powerful. The more significant the hooding, still a good result, but it's not going to be as powerful. Right. Someone who has significant hooding needs surgery.
Okay.
Right. And I'm always going to recommend that first. Right. But if someone if either they're not ready for surgery or they kind of want a little feel for it beforehand, right. I think it's a big, it's an investment. So you don't want to necessarily do that. If you're thinking about surgery, do the surgery, and the surgeon will always tell you, if you're a good candidate or not. But mild to moderate hooding, good candidate.
So what is the cost for that?
So it starts around $1,500 to $2,000.
Okay.
And then sometimes I actually will do a brow lift at the same time with it, and that is an addition. So I can lift the brow by a few more millimeters compared to Botox with the plasma pen. So I put the actual plasma pen marks above the brow in kind of the area that I want to elevate, and the skin will contract in that pattern.
Wow. So you're not only lifting the eyelid with the pen, but the brow as well.
And we can also lower eyelid skin. We can tighten that as well.
Wow. Oh, is it good for like the crepiness?
Correct.
Oh.
Very good for the crepiness, for the lower eyelid skin.
Amazing. And what did we mention downtime?
Usually about 5 to 7 days.
And 5 to 7 days, when we talk about downtime, 5 to 7 days of are you red, peeling, burnt?
It's red and you kind of see those marks. Those marks fall off between the first day to 5 days. It almost looks like someone took a pen and made little black marks in a square fashion. And those will fall off by themselves. I just have you apply Aquaphor and just in that application, some of them will fall off. It's scabbing.
Got it.
But the area around it kind of turns red and a little bit swollen and irritated. And that resolves within 5 days and there's no pain after.
OMG. If people want to learn more about this,
yeah,
where can we go?
You can go to our website. So sanctuarycosmeticcenter.com has more information on it. You can also go to my Instagram. I had a recent post. I'm happy to answer any questions on direct messenger. So if you want to roll up into my DMs, I will always respond. At Dr. Miriam Nas. And so, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is just getting the information on our website, just kind of learning the technology behind it.
Oh my goodness. And of course, if you have any questions that you want to ask us, Ryan is just like, I can see the,
he's just,
they're just, everything's going on over there. You can always write to us, hello@artbeautypodcast.com. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Art Beauty Podcast.
We're going to see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.